Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. All of it brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Right now, for just $5 with free shipping, you'll get the six-blade executive razor, plus trial sizes of the shave butter, body cleanser, and one-wipe Charlie's. Just for $5, dollarshaveclub.com/martini. More on that a little bit later. Jim, let's talk about our good martini. And this has been an issue, clearly, for the Trump administration. Cabinet secretaries not exactly toeing the line on ethics, and the White House is now pushing back. CNN, the White House held private meetings with four cabinet-level officials last month to scold them for embarrassing stories about questionable ethical behavior at their respective agencies. Sources familiar with the sessions tell CNN. Internal watchdogs have launched at least 9 audits, reviews, or investigations across several cabinet agencies. And stories about first-class travel, expensive office furniture, and internal strife have become commonplace. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson, Veterans Affairs Secretary David Shulkin, and Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt all met with officials from the White House Counsel's Office and the Cabinet Liaison. The meetings were held at Chief of Staff John Kelly's request and were intended to provide a clear message that optics matter. Among the highlighted advice, you are the best guardian of your reputation. Your record-keeping practices must be designed with a purpose to prove innocence at the complaint phase or with the press. Even if legal, does not mean you should do it. Optics questions, does the event or travel further the president's priorities, your department, or the agency's mission? And remember, an ethics opinion matters only if the ethics officer received all the information. So, Jim, hopefully the message has gotten through. A lot of people have been concerned. Started with Tom Price and his travel. He actually resigned. And then some of this has popped up again with some of the folks I mentioned earlier. So hopefully John Kelly is straightening up the ship here.
Yeah, I say this is the good martini today because, look, Greg, how often do we get to salute the White House for upholding a high standard of ethics and expecting more from the cabinet agencies? It's kind of a nice, pleasant role reversal here. I don't know if this comes from John Kelly himself or someone on his staff who noticed these things, but look.
Every couple of days, we get some sort of worsening story of an example of waste from a cabinet official in this administration. Look, we are the Republicans. We're supposed to be the party of smaller government. We want to target wasteful spending. We don't want to see fancy new doors at the Department of Interior. We don't want to see a luxurious state-of-the-art dining room set over at the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Now, look, obviously, we're going to have enough problems with the administration and with President Trump and his travel expenditures, the expenditures of the Secret Service having to protect places like Mar-a-Lago. Every time this happened, it is a self-inflicted wound. And some of these cabinet officials are doing, you and I would argue in other contexts, fine jobs. I'm really disappointed to see Shulkin spending all this money on overseas travel, going to things like Wimbledon, because he's actually, you know, getting the ball rolling on several fronts at the Department of Veterans Affairs. On the other hand, if you come across as, you know, living like Marie Antoinette, you know, or something like that on the government dime, you got to go. You can't say, oh, we're going to enforce this for Tom Price, but we're just going to turn a blind eye when other cabinet secretaries do it. I think everything laid out in that presentation by Kelly makes absolute sense. If you're a cabinet secretary, it's not just, is it legal? You have to set a good example for everyone else. You can't be spendthrift. You can't expect taxpayers to shell out for you to do all kinds of stuff. We fumed at the Obama administration over stuff like that fancy conference for the General Services Administration officials over in Las Vegas a couple of years ago. In only, you know, a year and change in this administration, we've seen too many examples of wasteful spending, which makes people think that this is not merely an ideological or philosophical approach to government we're making. It's simply a partisan argument we're making, that we only worry about wasteful spending under Democrat presidents and we'll give Republican cabinet officials a pass. Well, you have to stop these kinds of expenditures. Otherwise, you know, they may go the route of Tom Price.
No, that's absolutely right. And there was some, I don't even think it was Carson. I think it was the acting secretary told the now HUD whistleblower, you can't get a good chair for $5,000. I'd be upset if he redecorated the whole office for $5,000. That's insane.
Yeah. In every one of these cases, just what is so bad about the old place, right? I mean, how often do you redecorate your house? What is this, HGTV for the federal government?
All right, let's move on to our bad martini, Jim. And President Trump got a lot of attention over the weekend by going to Western Pennsylvania and stumping for Rick Saccone in the special election in Pennsylvania's 18th congressional district. This is the Tim Murphy seat. I believe he even ran unopposed last time, but Tim Murphy's no longer in Congress because he tried to get his mistress to have an abortion. So now we have a race between Rick Saccone, a state legislator, and Connor Lamb. He's the Democrat. He's the moderate guy who's not like those other Democrats in Washington, Jim, except for the fact that he absolutely toes the line when it comes to abortion in all circumstances, absolutely no questions asked, because he was asked about the 20-week ban that Republicans have been pushing. A lot of word salad here, as reported in National Review. Quote, I just want to say I don't use the term pro-life to describe what I personally believe, because that's a political term. It's not one that you learn in Catholic school or anywhere else in the church. He also goes on to say, we believe that life begins at conception, but as a matter of separation in church of state, I think a woman has the right to choose under the law, so I would vote against a ban on abortion after 20 weeks. Now, this is a deeply red district, or at least a deeply Trump district, based on the 2016 results, yet Rick Saccone not exactly setting the world on fire. Jay Cost writing in National Review, Saccone is proudly running as Trump 2.0, pledging strongly to support the president if and when he gets to Congress, but he hardly has the panache of the man he claims to emulate. Moreover, as one plugged-in Republican consultant told me, his issue set is so orthodox, it looks like he thinks his constituency is the Heritage Foundation break room. Worst of all, his campaign has been, to put it bluntly, pathetic. His fundraising has been anemic, forcing him to rely heavily on the National Party. His campaign schedule has been lackadaisical, and his grassroots organization basically non-existent. And if you look at the fundraising numbers, that's clearly true. The NRCC is basically bankrolling the entire campaign, whereas Connor Lamb on the Democratic side is raising a ton of money here. So, Jim, obviously the media will go nuts if the Democrat wins this seat, and it certainly could be a major warning sign to the GOP in a district that may not exist in a few months. But what do you make of it all?
You know, Greg, the first problem for Saccone is that The Heritage Foundation break room isn't even in this district. If he was running the District of Columbia, maybe that would make sense. Maybe a couple of the interns or folks hanging out there, maybe they are registered to vote. But yeah, look, try to kind of sort through there just on his perspective on partial birth abortion and abortion in general. Greg, I guess it's the kind of opposition that involves not doing anything to stop it, prevent it, or limit it. So how is that different from supporting it again? Yeah, anyway, not really a clear distinction there. But beyond that, look, this is the bad martini for several reasons. I think most people would say that right now, looking at the very limited polling numbers that we have and just the general atmosphere on the ground, people think it's going to be close, meaning you're probably going to either have a narrow Connor Lamb victory or a narrow victory by Saccone. Neither of those is particularly good in a district where Trump won by 20 points. Demographically, this is the district that is the oldest in Pennsylvania. This is basically the southwest corner, a little bit of the suburbs of Pittsburgh. So it's not this, you know, people are saying this isn't exactly classic Trump country, or at least the entire district isn't that the way you might think. Back when Rick Santorum was in the House, some of this, some of his district overlapped with the lines of this district right now. Look, this is not an area where Republicans should be down significantly or feeling that, you know, going neck and neck. The unemployment rate in the Pittsburgh metropolitan area, 4.5%. The economy is doing pretty darn well. We are at relative peace and prosperity. If you're Rick Saccone, you can't ask for a better national environment economically to run in this situation. Now, obviously, you mentioned earlier, his fundraising has been really anemic. Apparently, he's not exactly a whirling dervish of raw political charisma, and it's entirely possible he will bobble away a very what should be an extremely winnable race, a race in which he should be the favorite. There are certain disagreements about whether Trump's performance on Saturday in the district is going to help things or hurt. He certainly sounds like he wants, you know, Saccone sounds like he wants to be a full-throated supporter of the president in Washington. Look, if Republicans lose to it will be a demonstration that Republicans can lose in districts that look safe. This has been a Republican seat for a really long time. Murphy did not have an opponent for several cycles. This was deep, you know, deep red territory. If Democrats can win here, they can, you know, convince themselves they can win anywhere. If Saccone wins by a narrow margin, it's not that much more reason to feel secure because, as said, demographically, in terms of economics, in terms of the general political environment, he should be doing much better than this. Some of this you can put on the candidate, but honestly, I have a hard time believing that the president's approval rating is in the high 30s and low 40s. It doesn't have something to do with the fact the Republicans are struggling in what should be pretty friendly territory.
What a mess. What an absolute mess. And Tim Murphy, this is really all your fault, but I guess it's a little beneficial to have a canary in the coal mine here, literally in that part of the country, to determine what the Republicans might be facing heading into the full brunt of the midterm season here. So if you're going to be out there stumping for votes, you want to be well-groomed, well-hygiened. You want to be smelling good. You don't want people to say that candidate stinks because you actually stink. It's because they don't agree with you. So let's talk about Dollar Shave Club and all the wonderful options that they have, because Jim and I both use Dollar Shave Club products and we love them. DollarShaveClub.com is where you want to go. They deliver everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. Dollar Shave Club is more than just razors. Dollar Shave Club is better than shopping in a store.
This is because Dollar Shave Club delivers to you everything you need to look, smell, and feel your best. Shampoo, body wash, toothpaste, you name it. And of course, they offer the best razors I've ever used. I get an amazing high-quality shave every morning from my Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor. But the true hero of any morning routine is Dr. Carver's Shave Butter. It helps the razor gently glide across your spin. You have to experience it to believe it. Another must-have experience is how Dollar Shave Club delivers everything to you. That means no more trips to the store, wandering the aisles, hunting for razors and shampoo and toothpaste, and then having to play at being a cashier, scanning and bagging your own stuff.
No more of that. For a mind-blowing experience, join Dollar Shave Club today. And for just $5 with free shipping, you get the six-blade executive razor plus trial sizes of the shave butter, body cleanser, and the One Wipe Charlies. Then keep the blades coming for just a few bucks more a month. Get yours at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. All right, Jim, let's move on to our crazy martini now. And for that, we go to Elizabeth Warren, Massachusetts senator. I believe she made her first ever appearance on Fox News Sunday yesterday. John Roberts sitting in for Chris Wallace, and they talked a lot about North Korea and about trade policy. Interview went on for about 11, 12 minutes, and that was the bulk of it. But the last question dealt with an interesting challenge lodged towards Senator Warren as she gears up for re-election here, as to whether or not she actually is of Native American ancestry, which has been a point of controversy in recent years. So Roberts reads the editorial from a Massachusetts newspaper and then gets Warren's response. Here we go.
There are many people who are saying, should you choose to run in 2020, and one of these groups is the Berkshire Eagle, Massachusetts newspaper that endorsed you in 2012, that the issue of your ancestry will come up, and they're suggesting that you put it to rest, saying, quote, that Elizabeth Warren should screw up her courage and take the spit test, a DNA test, that a positive test would permanently resolve the issue while possibly shutting down President Trump. Would you be willing to take a DNA test to put this issue to rest?
Look, let's start again where you started. I'm not running for president. But let me tell you a little bit about my family.
So then she goes on for a while to talk about how her father and mother fell in love in Oklahoma, and it was a forbidden romance because her mother was part Indian and her father's family didn't like that. And then she goes on and on to talk about that and concludes this way.
I know who I am because of what my mother and my father told me, what my grandmother and my grandfather told me, what all my aunts and uncles told me, and my brothers. It's a part of who I am, and no one's ever going to take that away.
Jim, how convincing is that?
It's a part of me. No, it's not! Or at least your family stories might be part of you, but a actual claim to this heritage. Look, this is not something where it's been lost to the winds of time. The DNA test would clear this up really quick. And here's the thing. If you're somebody says, hey, Garrity, you know, St. Patrick's Day is coming up. We know you're going to wear green. Sure, your name sounds Irish. Sure, we see you drinking all the time. Sure, we see you eating potatoes all the time. How do we really know you're Irish, Mr. Garrity? I have no problem taking the DNA test. And yeah, maybe you'd find some other, you know, stuff in my genetic bouillabaisse. But in the end, you basically, okay, I'd be kind of surprised if I wasn't. I'd have to figure out some explanation as to why I live up to so many cultural stereotypes, but that would be the case. And, you know, fine. Like, life would go on. I hadn't staked my identity or, say, getting tenure or the diversity that I bring to the Harvard Law faculty, which Harvard did brag about way back when, on my, you know, identity with a certain culture. I understand, you know, Elizabeth Warren has gone and spoken to Native American groups lately. She clearly is nervous about this. She said in that same interview, she's not running for president in 2020. We'll see. Greg, I'm just trying to think, if she were to say, I'm definitely not running, and she pledged and she promised. And then she suddenly took that back. Greg, is there any term we could use for someone who gives something and then takes it back? Is there any? It'll come to me. But anyway, the point being that, you know, this has been quote unquote dogging her since she first ran for office. And most people looked at this and, you know, she contributed to that silly Native American powwow chow cookbook in which she said a crab omelet was the, you know, the Cherokee dish. It seems really, really implausible. And her evidence of talking about high cheekbones and all this kind of stuff. Look, the reason people get upset about this is that people look at things like affirmative action and they think that this is a game that is rigged, a game that is played. And if you can find some sort of ludicrous, oh, I'm 1/64th on my mother's side with this particular group, ergo, I am a minority and I deserve the extra hand up that, you know, minorities deserve because of historical injustices. We can have a separate argument about the validity or the value of affirmative action. But I think everybody would say that if you're going to have affirmative action for, say, African-Americans, it should go to people who are genuinely African-American. If you're going to give this to a program to help, if you want to have a scholarship to help young Native Americans, you'd want to give it to actual people who are Native Americans, not those who have this extremely tenuous by one tiny thread going back 14 generations that connects to them or something like that. And what it does is it makes Elizabeth Warren look like a phony. It makes her look like someone who's willing to claim something that wasn't really a plausible claim, but she needed that little bit of advantage in a competitive academic environment. She needed some way to stand out, and voila, just another woman turned into a Elizabeth Warren representative of Native Americans on the faculty of Harvard Law. Now, maybe this isn't a false charge of lying. Maybe she really is Native American. If she takes the test and it came back, you know what? Scott Brown and Trump, who keeps calling her Pocahontas. By the way, the joke is Pocahontas. The joke is not that she's Native American. The joke is that she's claiming to be without any real evidence, right? The joke is that she's a phony. It's not, haha, Native Americans, they're so silly. Maybe in Trump's mind it is. That's, you know, that's one of the things that drives us crazy when Trump calls us her Pocahontas, because the joke is that she's fake, that she's phony, that she's not what she says she is. But anyway, if she takes the test and it comes back with, you know, DNA, look, even 5%, even some, you know, modest amount, okay, fine. You have, you know, this tenuous connection. Various Native American tribes have pointed out she's never applied for tribal membership. She's never had tribal membership. In their eyes, she is not a Native American, yet represented herself for, you know, a good portion of her career. The fact that she stopped representing herself as Native American is a fairly clear indicator that she recognized she was doing something she should not. But anyway, if she takes the DNA test and it comes back positive, great. The fact that she won't take it, by the way, Greg, this assumes she has not already taken it and come back with a result she did not like. The fact that it doesn't want to take it says to me that she herself knows there's a chance that it's going to come back either negative or with some, you know, extraordinarily tenuous connection to Native Americans. Then there are some Native Americans who have objected to this, and I think they have good reason to object. That basically, you know, you should be who you are, be proud of who you are, and don't pull a Rachel Dolezal. Don't, you know, make an implausible claim of some sort of cultural experience. Look, if the left is going to scream bloody murder over cultural appropriation, doesn't this seem like the biggest and most glaring case of cultural appropriation we could imagine, Greg?
She just won't let it go away. So maybe
this is where I get Greg in trouble.
This has been going on for 6 years, really over 20 years, but 6 years since she decided to jump into politics, yeah. And she simply can't put it away when there are so many easy ways to do so. Absolutely unbelievable.
And DNA tests have been around the whole time. I mean, at any point, she could have taken the test, said, "Voila, here's my blood, here's my spit, here's the results from Ancestry.com or any one of those groups. Hold up the box and say, there, this is the proof. I'm Native American. Shut up, you losers." And we all have to say, okay, you're right. You got a point. But she's not willing to do that, which says to me either she's afraid that the answer is going to be no, or deep down, either maybe she already tested. I don't know. She already knows the answer is no. If she happens to be the nominee for the Democrats in 2020, Greg, which I don't think is going to come to pass, don't you think Trump is just going to go around with a DNA test box? Every rally. The old chant was lock her up. The new chant this time would be take the test, take the test.
Oh, this could be a really deep and meaningful campaign with Trump's doing that. And on the Trump side, people demanding his tax returns and, you know, whether Stormy gets to release whatever pictures and other stuff she has. Could be really highbrow.
Yeah, nothing but the best for us, Greg. Happy Monday, everybody.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to visit our friends at Dollar Shave Club, dollarshaveclub.com/martini for just $5 and get that starter set with the razor and the shave butter body cleanser and the one wipe Charlie's. dollarshaveclub.com/martini. Tune in again Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.